CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Josh Rogan, Global Opinions for the Washington Post, most importantly, the author of Chaos Under Heaven, Trump, Xi, and the Battle for the 21st Century. We go to a subset of that battle, Syria. There are events in Syria that are striking in that the Biden administration is ambitious to resolve in some fashion the long drawn out Syrian civil war, but it is striking, Josh writing about Tunisia earlier in the week, that the two episodes that began the Arab Spring, the street vendor self-immolation in Tunis, and now the revolt in Daraa, the southernmost town of Syria, are back in the news, back in the conflict. Josh, a very good evening to you. It's economy of scene, but then again, here it is. We go to a remark that's in your column from Muaz Mustafa, executive director of the Syrian Emergency Task Force, which is an American NGO that supports the Syrian opposition. Idlib is the final obstacle for Syria, Iran, and Russia to secure the military victory they want, said Mustafa. If they declare victory, they will entrench Syria as the North Korea of the Middle East. Please explain North Korea of the Middle East. Is that what the Assad regime wants? Is that what Russia wants? Where the when the satellites pass overhead, there's no lights whatsoever. Good evening to you, Josh.
Oh, good evening, John. Well, what Muaz Mustafa was trying to explain to my readership in the Washington Post was that this notion that if we just let Assad win the war faster, that that will bring peace and stability to Syria is not accurate. It's not true. It's not what's happening on the ground. And, you know, we have this sort of hopeful wish in Washington that if we just, you know, acknowledge that the Assad regime is eventually going to win the war and crush the revolution, that's actually the best policy, because then he'll retake the country and it'll essentially go back to the way it was, which wasn't great, but didn't represent a bleeding wound in the heart of the Middle East. And what the point is that Muaz Mustafa and others, including the head of the White Helmets, who I interviewed for this article, and a lot of international experts like Stephen Rapp, the head of the used to be the war crimes ambassador for the State Department under Obama, what they argue is that just look at what's going on. It's been 11 years. And the people in Syria haven't stopped fighting, and it's because the Assad regime has been so brutal, using mass atrocities, war crimes, and crimes against humanity to achieve their aims, that these people won't forgive them ever. And that, in fact, what we're doing by not supporting them and by allowing the Assad regime to slowly but surely bomb them or starve them to death is simply creating an endless conflict, a conflict where the more Assad can thumb his nose at the international community, the more brutal he and his Russian and Iranian partners will become. And that feeds the endless cycle of atrocities, which lead to more extremism, which leads to more refugees, which leads to more instability, which leads to, again, more atrocities. And that's what we've seen for the last 11 years. So what I'm arguing, and I think what the Biden administration is debating, is simply, okay, well, even if you believe that, what can we do? What could we do? What could the U.S. government do to change that at all? And what I say in the column is simply that, you know, what the people on the ground in Syria are saying is that they heard Biden as a candidate, and they heard Secretary of State Blinken promise to get more diplomatically involved, not just when there's an aid cutoff issue at the UN, as there was last month, not just on the humanitarian side, in other words, but to actually lead the international diplomacy to drive some sort of negotiated solution that can stop the atrocities and preserve some level of dignity and justice and accountability so that the war could actually end on terms that were sustainable. And unfortunately, what we see is none of that from the Biden administration. And what the Biden administration officials told me quite clearly is that, well, this is under a long review and we're really not sure. And what the Syrians tell me is like, well, while that endless review is ongoing, the Assad regime and Russia and Iran are increasing the violence, increasing the killing, increasing the atrocities. And so time is really running out for the Biden team to prove that they actually meant what they said. Now, that doesn't mean that we should go to war in Syria. It doesn't mean that we should have a military intervention. It means using the tools of diplomacy and even economic statecraft in a way that we've used in other places, including North Korea, including Iran, not always successfully, but at least we tried. And in Syria, it just seems like the Biden administration isn't trying. It seems like it isn't a priority for them. And that's clear, at least to the people on the ground.
You report something that is fresh to me. The southern city of Daraa, where the revolution began, where the Assad regime has been brutal for 11 years, there's a starvation siege. Now, Josh, that is on a scale of war crimes at the top. Is there no capability of relieving that siege and feeding the people? Airdrop? We did that once upon a time in Berlin. Can we do it now?
We have the capability, we just don't have the will. And there have been a series of sieges over the course of the war. But what's particularly egregious about what the Assad regime is doing in Daraa, where the revolution began in 2011, is that Daraa already signed a truce deal, okay? And that was brokered by the United States, the Obama administration. And it was based on the assurances from the Russians that they wouldn't be tortured or starved to death if they laid down their arms. And all of that was reneged upon. The people of Daraa took the deal, but didn't. The Assad regime didn't deliver. Now they're killing them even more brutally, and they've given up all of their means to defend themselves. That's what's going on the ground. It's that. So another sort of wishful thinking policy that I hear a lot from Biden administration officials is, oh, well, we've got to negotiate ceasefires between the opposition and the regime to keep the violence down, because isn't that the most important thing? And that's just not the way it happens. And we're seeing the same thing in Idlib. They'll negotiate a ceasefire, wait till the international community is distracted, and then start killing a lot of innocent people again, targeting first responders, targeting the white helmets, targeting hospitals, targeting schools. You know, they're trying to depopulate these areas. And if you, again, just sort of think about the North Korea analogy, that's what the North Korean regime does. They kill anyone who doesn't go along with the official program. And that's a capricious level of cruelty and injustice that usually the international community stands against. And, you know, when we look at Tunisia again, which was held up by the international community as the opposite of Syria, the place where democracy took root in the Arab world, the place where the ideals and values of pluralism, again, imperfectly, actually survived and could provide a model to other countries like Syria. But as we see there now, without international support and attention, that's fragile too. Democracy is always fragile, but it's especially fragile in parts of the world that don't have the experience and don't have the civil society and who the international community has totally abandoned. And so that for me spells a pattern of, you know, the President Biden preaching about, you know, the grand struggle between democracies and autocracies is the most important issue of our day. But when you look around, and I would add Burma to this list, democracies keep falling on his watch, and he doesn't seem willing, or maybe he's unwilling, maybe he's unable to do much about it.
We have a minute. Moscow's calculation that we will not intervene, is that correct?
Yes. Moscow's calculation is that they care more about Syria than we do, that they care more about Syria than Joe Biden does. So they don't, all they really have to do is wait for Biden to pull out. And we still have hundreds of troops in the Northeast. We're still working with the SDF. We still have interests there. There's still ISIS there. There's still the Iranians there. You know, so I think what they're calculating is that if President Biden is willing to pull out in Afghanistan and let it fall, and then he's going to pull the troops out of Iraq, Syria can't be far behind. And I fear that they're right about that calculation. I fear that Vladimir Putin understands Biden pretty well at this point, and that, again, time is running out for the Biden administration to either say, this is a never again moment on our watch and we care and we're willing to put more skin in the game, or to let these people suffer for the next generation.
Josh Rogan, Global Opinions, the Washington Post, writing about Syria and mentioning Tunisia. Both states are at risk of failure or beyond. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.